Welcome to our banquet, everyone. The first thing I want to do is I want to make sure that the board members that are here are introduced.
So I just want to say a little bit about our board. William has been on all day. So our first vice president is William Craig. And then we have Brian, who's our secretary and a darn good one, I might add. And then we have Carmen, who is our treasurer, and we've talked about her being ill. And then we have Katie, who's just always willing to step in all the time. And we have Candy. And then we have Pam. And Pam has been here. Pam is currently in Iowa and has been receiving some medical treatment and is with her wonderful children. And we miss having Pam so very much. But every now and again, she sends an email when I get something wrong. And I'm so thankful for that.
Pamela is our first vice president, and then William is second.
Would anyone like to introduce themselves, Brian? You've been talking. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Been secretary for a number of years before, and then was first vice president for a little while here. Now I'm back to secretary here in the last year. I was elected last year. I live here in Glen Allen, and folks that were on yesterday, you heard I work here at KCAM. We have an AM and an FM radio station here, and I've been here for 4 years in Glen Allen, and I've been in Alaska 18 years. Joined the NFP quite a while ago, and then was out for a long time. Joined it here again in 2009.
Katie, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Katie Lester, and I'm outreach board member, and this is my first year being a board member. I've only learned and started participated in the NFB since 2019. It was my first state convention, the only one I've done in person. I have lived in the past 6 years in Seward, but have recently in August moved up to Anchorage to attend the University of Alaska to achieve my degree in social work. Currently, the goal is to graduate in 2023 with the bachelor's and a potential to go further into the master's degree.
We did receive a donation a while back from Stephen Priddle. I think he's been mentioned a couple times. Stephen told me, be sure you ask me. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. So we are just so grateful for that. And then we also, of course, there's the Vanda Pharmaceuticals, $500. And we received another $100 donation from someone who has been on throughout the day, and which is very kind. And we are truly appreciative. Scholarships. We've been talking about scholarships for a while, and we are now going to, between the months of November 1st and January 31st, that gives us 3 months, we're going to go ahead and accept scholarship applications. The application is going to be online. The form is done and ready to go. So I will be posting that. You guys post that on your Facebook page if you do Facebook, if you know other blind students, post it. We would like to get, they need to be residents of Alaska. In terms of our budget, I just want to mention a couple things. So normally Carmen would send a budget report, and I kind of know what we've spent this month. I know what I've spent. So the National Federation of the Blind of Alaska paid $100 for 4 gift certificates from the Independence Market. And then we also paid Michael $150 for this quarter that we have started in October. I'm going to tell you now, and I know people have heard me say this before, it's the best $50 that we could spend, because Michael does wonderful things for our website. And I just want to make sure everyone knows that all these sessions are going to be online. You will be able to listen. I'm going to really push that this year. I didn't as much last year, but I really am. And the reason I want to do that is I want those who didn't get to listen to listen. So I'll be sending links to different talks and in the email and encouraging my coworkers to listen and really partake of what we had the opportunity to hear while we were here this weekend. With that being said, I think we're ready to hear from Terry.
I want to thank Bonnie and the rest of my Federation family in Alaska for giving me this opportunity to share my blindness journey and my Federation journey with all of you. I'm going to start by telling you a story about a dream, a reoccurring dream that I had last year during the pandemic when it was heavy and strong. I would wake up in a complete emotional mess. You know those kinds of dreams when you wake up so confused and the feelings are so raw right on the surface. So as many of you might know that I enjoy and I get a lot of mental health from running. I don't just run 5Ks. I run long distances as long as 115 miles in a 72-hour span. During the pandemic, I wasn't able to get out and run. I was isolated in my home like everyone else. And I would wake up from these dreams just completely confused, wondering why I just wasn't feeling like myself. So the dream was of me at a race, the start line of a race. And I started with my group of guides, and my running guides are the friends who I've made throughout the years in my running journey. We run together, we laugh together, we cry together. And we stay connected with a nylon tether that's about 18 inches long, each of us having our wrists through a loop on either end so that we can have free flowing movement of our arms. In the dream, the tether's gone and slowly my guides disappear until I'm the only one running and I just keep moving, even though I've lost my actual guides. I just keep going and flowing with the crowd, and it turns into a loop obstacle course, like the McDonald's playgrounds where you're climbing through tubes and over nets and through puddles and fountains. And I just keep going. And each time I had that dream, I woke up so lost and confused and wondering what that dream meant. So I'm going to rewind a little bit before going back into that dream and tell you about another dream I had. This dream was of a little girl in uncertain adolescent years. This little girl felt so lost, not quite fitting in the not quite blind, not quite sighted world, and never knowing where she belonged. After getting hit in the face so many times and refusing to play any more ball sports in her physical education class, this little girl decided just to walk laps around the school track. I thought, if I could just keep walking these laps and running these laps, I could do a mile. I could do two. I could do four. Maybe I could do a full 26.2. So that little girl had this dream to run a marathon, but how could I run a marathon if I couldn't see? How would I know where to go? How would I know when to turn or if I was going off course? I wouldn't realize the how decades later. In my early 20s, I was no longer able to follow my fake it to make it motto. The fake it to make it motto of pretending that I could see so that I could fit in with the sighted world. The fake it to make it motto of letting everybody else around me think I was just this stuck-up girl on campus because I refused to acknowledge people waving at me or handing me things. And the fake it to make it motto of letting people think I was this drunk because I was stumbling around and tripping over stools when I went out with friends. The fake it to make it motto was definitely not working. It became exhausting, and I knew I needed to change. I knew that one day my tricks were probably going to take me tumbling down the steps, which they did. I was not able to find work and started volunteering at the Sacramento Society for the Blind. Later on, got hired as their front desk receptionist and invited to attend a staff training. I was standing at the top of some stairs with my blind coworkers, one who had her long white cane, one with her guide dog, and me with my folding cane in my backpack, literally thinking that I should pull out my folding cane. Before I could pull that cane out, I stumbled down a flight of stairs. I thought I had hit rock bottom. I was so embarrassed. At the top of the stairs, I was talking to them about their shoes and our clothes. And there I was sitting on the floor, and my cute yellow shoes I was just showing off were twisted in odd angles. So that day I decided that I would no longer deny my blindness and take my own future in my own hands. I started comparing the different training centers. I was told by my vocational rehab counselor to do some research and make a decision on where I wanted to go get training. I looked at the products, the people who came out of a state-run training center, and the people and their professions and how they lived their lives of the people who came out of an NFB training center. Shortly after that, I was invited to attend my first NFB chapter meeting. And a week later, I attended my first NFB of California State Convention. That's where I met Joanne Wilson and Rosie Carranza. They invited me out to lunch. And Rosie said, "You look like you're a really fast walker. You should try one of these longer canes." At that time, I was only pulling out my folding cane to use for public transportation so that I could tell the bus drivers that I couldn't see and ask for their assistance to let me know when my stop was. And I was only pulling it out where I knew there would be steps on campus so I could avoid falling down those few steps that I had already fallen down a few times. I was also in a new relationship, and my boyfriend, now husband of over 14 years, found my cane in my closet. And he said, "What is this?" And I said, "Oh, that's my cane. I'm legally blind." So we, meeting in our early 20s, have grown up together and grown into my blindness together. It was a hard decision. Do I put college on hold, a budding relationship on hold? Do I go to a training center just an hour away where I can come home and see family every weekend, where I can have my boyfriend pick me up and we can explore the Bay Area? Or do I take my training seriously? Do I take my time off from my time, my heavily scheduled timeline that I have put on myself to finish school and start a career or do I just stay? I decided if I was going to do it, I was going to do it all the way. And that's always how I've been. If I'm going to run, might as well run a full marathon, right? So a few months after attending my first California convention and meeting the woman who started the Louisiana Center for the Blind, I boarded a plane, said goodbye to what I knew, and started my training at the Louisiana Center for the Blind. Those 9 months pushed me to more than uncomfortable limits. I remember coming back in after extremely difficult cane travel lessons and being so upset with Roland for sending me to a location that was closed down where the Burger King next door gave me their receipt so that I could show him that I had been right there where he sent me. Leaving it on his desk with a note that I brailled with the slated stylus, which I was learning, and then getting called back to his office later and him saying, "Terry, you found the right address. Burger King is where I sent you." I had spent an hour walking in circles looking for a specific address, thinking it was that closed up building with cars driving by asking me if I needed help. And the Burger King employees didn't even know their own address. I remember days where it had rained and drenched me so bad. I had to take off all my clothes, put it in the dryer of the center, and wear an apron front and back so that I could wait for my clothes to dry. I remember being in such a rush to get through my woodshop class because I didn't think I needed to be in the woodshop class. I was determined to spend my time learning Braille and accessible technology and how to travel confidently with the long white cane, that I never realized the woodshop class would be what brought me to my most successful point in my training. It taught me to stop, to slow down, to have patience. And with that patience, I'll be able to precisely carve and drill those straight lines into the Braille box that I was making. So after 9 months of intensive training in what is oftenly known as the boot camp for the blind, I graduated from Louisiana Center and hopped on a plane to start my new life in Las Vegas. during my training, my husband had somewhat proposed to me while I was on a walk home from the center, contemplating on what I was going to do when I was done with training. I said, what am I going to do? Am I going to go back and live with my parents and commute back to Sacramento? Am I going to move back to Sacramento and find a new roommate? Because my roommate before I left was my sister, and she had moved up to Oregon. And he said, move to Vegas and marry me. So I moved to Vegas and I married him. I got to Nevada oozing with Federation philosophy, ready to hit the pavement and build the Federation in Nevada. Little did I know that the support, the bubble that I left, was long gone. Little did I know that the next few years would be some of the hardest struggles that I would face. I went back to school, and as a new up-and-coming leader in the Federation, I found myself falling into more leadership roles that I could handle. At one point, I was serving as the president of the National Association of Blind Students and serving as president of the National Federation of the Blind of Nevada. I was finishing up my last semester in school, and I had just had a baby. Something had to go. So I set aside my leadership roles. I did not run again for president of NABS. I stepped down from my role as president of the NFB of Nevada. For the next few years, I focused on my family's health and my own mental health. But I did not stay isolated and alone. Those next few years were the mommy and me years. I found a new community since I didn't have my Federation family to actively participate in during this small hiatus. I found the mommy and me meetup community. I joined my first mommy and me group when my daughter was 9 months old. And before we knew it, the group had grown so large, and I was hosting playdates in my own home because I couldn't always make it to playdates all over town due to transportation troubles that we often face as blind parents. I wasn't comfortable with 102 members in the group and knowing where we were going to play and not knowing who would be there. So I left that group and started my own group. I live in a master plan community called Southern Highlands, where everything is walkable. We have 4 parks within a mile of our gated community. We have restaurants, UPS, Starbucks, a nail salon, ice cream, Dairy Queen, Baskin Robbins. We have everything we need. The kids' schools are within walking distance. So we called ourselves the Southern Highlands Moms, Babies, and Tots. At the time of starting the group, I had a toddler, and I had a baby. And that grew to a community of moms who are still my close friends today. Many of them were just here celebrating my son's 10th birthday just last weekend at a birthday campout where boys slept in a tent in the backyard. During the last few years of our mommy and me days, my mommy friends started noticing something wrong with my daughter's eyesight. This was the same time that the pediatrician pointed it out too. She wasn't tracking things, and she was reaching and kind of feeling for the lollipops that she was being handed. So we went and found a pediatric ophthalmologist who diagnosed her with a completely different eye condition, even though she was displaying the same exact symptoms at the same exact age as me. And we decided, okay, we're going to give it some time. We waited to see if what the doctor said would be true. She said, she's fine. It's developmental, and her eyes will correct itself when she starts school age. I had planned to homeschool my kids, and was getting really frustrated because my daughter wasn't able to see the puzzle pieces and, distinguish between the colors. And I asked her one day, you really can't see? Or are you just trying to be like mommy? And she said, no, I really can't see. So we got a second opinion. And the moment that doctor looked into her eyes and said, oh, that's optic nerve atrophy, a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders. She was fine. She was going to be fine. She had the foundation that I had already gained from my training, and she had, and we had our Federation family. Sorry, I need a drink of water. It's really dry here in the desert. So because I knew where to turn, I reached out to my friends and colleagues in the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children. And I reached out to my friends in the Federation. I knew that in order for my daughter to get what she needed, we needed to start advocating sooner rather than later. She was just 4 years old, and we decided to go ahead and mainstream her instead of homeschooling her. We advocated for Braille in the classroom, and after many, many, many IEPs and being told after assessments that, yes, your daughter will need to learn Braille, but we'll consider teaching it to her when she gets to third grade, when the content gets greater and the print gets smaller. And we said, no, that's not okay. That's not good enough. Her peers are learning how to read now. She will learn how to read now too. So because of how heavily I reached out to my fellow parents of blind children, I was invited to serve on the national board of NOPBC, my first convention that I returned to the Federation. I had taken a 5-year hiatus, and our family went to our first family's national convention in 2015. This was in Orlando at our 75th anniversary. You guys might remember it's the year that we did the umbrella mosaic out in the parking lot. Unfortunately, our family didn't get to participate that day because my kids were up screaming, crying all night long. So that year, I fell back into leadership. The following year, I was asked by President Riccobono, Terry, I've got Kimmy Beverly here in my office, and I'm considering giving her a job at the National Center. Kimmy was currently serving as the president of the NFB of Nevada. And he asked me who I would recommend to serve and to take Kimmy's place. I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to do it. I had just come back into the organization. I was actively advocating for my daughter to get what she needed in school. I was raising 2 young children. But because of the love for the Federation, and because I knew that it was time for me to get back involved, not just for me, but for the next generation of Federation kids, I decided to run for state president again. Since then, I have been elected to serve on the national board. This happened in 2019 when my affiliate hosted national convention in Las Vegas, where I call home. And I have been reelected to serve as affiliate president for 3 times consecutively, and was just reelected to serve on the national board. I'm telling you my leadership roles here to give you some background of how much I have served the Federation and why I serve the Federation. Because I not only serve for me, but I serve for the next generation. But I want to take you back in time. Almost 40 years ago, my parents fled Cambodia. Over 40 years ago, my parents fled Cambodia because of the Pol Pot regime. The country had been torn apart. They had lived and worked in our version of genocide for years. And when the Vietnamese came to liberate our country, my mom's family left Cambodia on a 3-day trek to get to the safe Red Cross refugee camps in Thailand. During one of those nights, when when they were leaving the country, my grandfather, who had survived all of the horrendous things that happened to that killed half of the population of our country, passed away in his sleep. So here was my grandmother with $5 and a very young son, fleeing the country and ending, making their way to a refugee camp. My grandma told my mom, "You have all sisters, and your dad passed away to get us to safety. We're going to find you a husband. We need a man in our family." So my parents' marriage was arranged. And shortly after they got married, I was born in Thailand. They didn't know, they had no idea that they would be raising a blind child. Just before I turned 2 years old, we were able to immigrate to the United States. And my parents started noticing those same symptoms that we noticed with my daughter. And they traveled up and down California with teenage family members as translators, being told, "Oh, she'll be fine. Her eyesight will just develop and she'll be able to see when she starts school." And some doctors told them, "She's going to eventually go blind." Never in my childhood was it discussed. Never was the word blind mentioned. Growing up in a traditional Asian home, you just didn't talk about blindness. You don't talk about disabilities. So it wasn't until I was a senior in high school that I asked my eye doctor what the name of my eye condition was. And I finally told him, "I don't know how many years it's been, but I can't see that big E." So here I am now, today, 2021, raising a blind child and a sighted child. And earlier this year, I was at that race. I was at that race, the race I dreamt about. I have been running since 2017. I've run the Las Vegas Rock and Roll Marathon, the St. George Marathon, multiple half marathons, a 50K, an unsupported 24-hour race in my neighborhood because it was canceled because of the pandemic, where I ran 54 miles, and I ran an unsupported 100-miler during the weekend that the original race was supposed to happen. Just because I had trained for it and I knew I wanted to know if I could do it. So I was able to run 100 miles in less than 48 hours. And so when this actual race came up, I was there to do it for fun. I already knew that I could run 100 miles in under 40 hours. In this race, I had 72 hours to see how many miles I could get. My goal was to do it and to have the best time of my life. I started the run with my guides, and by lunchtime, my first guide left and my second guide hadn't arrived yet. My other group of guides were taking an extended lunch break. So I grabbed my cane and I just kept going. I looped, the race was done at a local park where I ran, where I did most of my marathon training at. And it was a 2.5 mile figure eight loop. So I just grabbed my cane and started moving. All the other runners were so astonished to see me running without a guide. They kept asking, where's your guides? Why are you running alone? I said, "Oh, I ditched them." I didn't feel like waiting. So I made so many new friends during that 72-hour race. My guides came and went. My family came and went. My husband came and went. I had my tent on the grass at the park, and I scheduled myself an afternoon nap every afternoon, and I let myself sleep for a few hours every night. At the end of Sunday night, I had started running on Friday morning. At the end of Sunday night, I listened to my body and listened to my intuition, and I just didn't feel safe. There were very few people left camping out. There was very few people left in the race. But I wasn't going to stop. I called my dad to come and pick me up so I could go home, get a good night's rest, soak in the tub, and be back the next morning, refreshed and feeling good, ready to finish the last few hours of the 72 hours endurance event. So I got there the next morning, and a famous runner called the Jester. The Jester, his real name is Ed, runs 100-mile races dressed up like a jester. He has run over 200 100-mile races. He's run the most 100-mile races, setting that record. He asked me if he could keep me company since my guides hadn't arrived yet. I'd already enlisted my dad in walking with me since he doesn't run. So we walked. We walked and talked, and he told me all about his running journey. And I asked him about some races that scared the bejesus out of me. One of those races being a race that starts in Badwater in Death Valley in July and covering 135 miles over three mountain ranges and ending at the base of Whitney Peak Portal, Whitney Peak being the highest point in the continental U.S., Badwater being the lowest point in the continental U.S. Those next few hours, Ed and I walked and talked and we ran, and I finished the 72-hour event, completing 115 miles, feeling more than fabulous. And my new bucket list goal in 2023 is to take the skills, the determination, the tenacity, and run 135 miles, starting from the lowest point in the continental U.S. in the middle of July and ending at the base of the highest point in the continental U.S. I couldn't do this without the people running alongside. I couldn't do this without the support of my friends and my family. And lastly, I could not do this without the training and the skills that I was pushed beyond my comfort levels during the time at the Louisiana Center for the Blind. So, Federation family in Alaska, that is my Federation story.
Terry, thank you so much for sharing your story. I knew you were a runner, but I didn't know of the story. And I think I may have vaguely heard about you being from Cambodia and your family. And that's such a great story. And, you know, I think it is incredible when someone finds the Federation and is able to make it, that it is able to help them expand who they are and learn the skills that allow them to really truly live the life they want. You couldn't have, I mean, when you do things like this where you really stretch yourself and you manage to find those that can support you, it's more than amazing. It's just commendable in every way. So thank you for sharing the story. Is there anything anyone would like to say before we close? I want everyone to know how much I've appreciated having you at this convention. Certainly all of your attendance has made it what it is. The comments, that questions people have asked, the participants, all of it has come together in a really cool way. I'm grateful to be a part of it. I'm grateful for my leadership role here in Alaska. It definitely stretches me for sure. And thank you to all those who have been here. We are going to have the archives, and we'll definitely hopefully be able to find ways for people to encourage people to listen to the stories and the experiences and the lessons and gain the knowledge that's available here. So any other thoughts?
So I do have one last thing to share. I mentioned earlier that I'm a collector of quotes, and I want to share a quote from one of my favorite characters. You guys know him, Winnie the Pooh. And he says, "You're stronger than you know, and you're braver than you think." So I just want to share that quote, because there's been so many times during my journey, and still so many times, that I'm sure I will question how strong I am and how brave I am. And I want to emphasize to everybody that you're stronger than you know, and you're braver than you think.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. Thank you again to everyone.